You're listening to Stand Out with Ian O'Connell, Wednesday evenings from 8 p.m. here on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome to the show tonight. I hope I find you well on this Wednesday evening. We're only a couple of days away from, well, I suppose, just over a week away from Christmas now, and it's getting into that kind of area where when you're in town, people are out shopping, you've the husbands and boyfriends out on Christmas Eve, that'll be getting last minute gifts and lastminute.com for a lot of them. So there's a bit of a buzz around the town now, and it's really starting to feel like Christmas, I suppose. So I hope you're all looking forward to this as much as I am. I'm delighted to say that my guest this week on Stand Out with myself, Ian O'Connell, is Fiona Murta. Fiona is an Irish Olympian rower. She made history winning bronze in the women's four at the 2020 Tokyo Olympic Games. That medal was Irish rowing's first women's Olympic medal. This year, she went on to win gold in the women's single sculls at the 2025 World Rowing Championships in Shanghai. Sit back and enjoy the show. Fiona, thanks a million for joining me today. I'm delighted to have you on for a chat. It's been a great year for you, and we'll get into that. How's life with you? All busy?
Yeah, it's been good, thanks. Yeah, busy, but back into the swing of things now. Do you know, last season is over and this year has officially started, so it's kind of fresh slate almost, but it's been good.
Are you looking forward to Christmas?
I am indeed, yeah, heading home next week, so it'll be nice to spend a few days with the family, and we head off to camp then to Seville on the 28th, so it's short-lived, but it'll be nice.
It'd be a small bit of warm weather, so
yeah, can't complain.
Can't complain. We'll be stuck here in the freezing cold then.
Yeah.
I suppose I always like to ask my guests at the start growing up. I know that I've heard you saying that your brother kind of was into rowing and then you kind of followed him. Before you got into, did you play any other sports, or what was your childhood like?
As a child, I wasn't particularly sporty, but I always tried everything, and I realised I was never very good at any of it. But in secondary school, I had also played hockey, and it was between hockey and rowing for a very long time. It's very funny. One of my first ever coaches down in Galway Rowing Club, he'd see me running from hockey training to rowing training, and I still have, you know, the hockey stick around me and the shin guards still on, and he'd be like, "When are you going to give that up?" You know, and I'd always joke with them. I'd be like, "How do you know I'm going to pick rowing? Like, how do you not know I'm going to quit rowing for hockey?" And he was like, I know you. I know which one you're going to make or what decision you're going to make." So I'll never forget the day. I think it was after the junior cert, anyways. And I realized, like, this is just unsustainable. I can't do it anymore. So I walked into the rowing club and I went to my coach and I was like, "I made the decision." And he was like, "About time."
You could have told you
so,
that.
Yeah, so did a bit of hockey again, wasn't any good at it, but I was really fit, so they always kept me out the wings and I just ran circles around people. But yeah, enjoyed it, you know.
Did you enjoy school?
Yeah, it was great, you know, made a lot of friends, and all my friends ended up being rowers as well, so it was fantastic, you know, and that's kind of the reason why I stayed in the sport. I was just hanging out with my friends every evening at the weekends. Regalas were like sleepovers, especially when you're, you know, 14, 15, so training kind of just came as a consequence or as a result of just hanging out with the people that you enjoyed spending time with. So I'm incredibly fortunate that that's kind of been a factor of rowing throughout my entire life. Do you know, I went to college with rowing and met incredible people, made lifelong friends, you know, got training done through all that, but it was mainly down to the people. And then when I came back from America, same situation with the University of Galway, and then even down here full-time, you know, the team down here are just so inspiring and motivating to be around, and they're genuinely lovely people and some of my closest friends. So it's great that you, and such a privilege that I get to spend all this time around people I really enjoy being around. And then we actually, you know, training is hard, but we get to do it together, and it makes it that more achievable or manageable.
And I think sometimes, Fiona, even parents can underestimate the importance of getting their child into a sport, not even just for the sport, but for the social aspect, like you said, don't they?
Yeah, so important. And it was such a driving factor for me. And It like sport teaches you so much about, independence and accountability and integrity, and you don't even realize those things at that age until you look back. And when you go and step into the workplace, all the skills that you learn through sport and how sport has carried you as a person, and the decision making and the teamwork and communication and all those things, and to get that into people at a really young age is it's invaluable, and it can really dictate how they go throughout their lives. You know what I mean? So I'm incredibly lucky. My parents never forced me into sport at all. They always were like, if it's something that you enjoy doing, we'll happily support you. And for, let's say, Rowan as a junior, throughout, exam season, the leave and say, especially you'd be morning training. And I live out in the country. I'm from out in the country in Galway. So my parents would drive me into town at, 5:30 in the morning so that I could go training, so then I could go to school. And they could have very easily have said no,
Yeah.
like it's that's too early or that's not manageable. But they never, they're I'm so grateful. They always were so supportive and always made sure that, if they saw how much enjoyment myself and my brother and I got, and they just continued to support that. So if it wasn't for that, I could have quit in leave and search, so
Absolutely.
yeah, really, yeah, grateful for this and the support of my parents. And it's important, parents have such a massive influence on things like that, so yeah, really grateful that I've always had a really positive support system like around me throughout those kind of things.
And like you said, it does independence. You mentioned there, you went to America. Did you, I suppose, going over there, did you kind of have to, in one way, kind of grow up quicker and be independent?
Yeah, absolutely. It was such a funny way in which it kind of happened. I went to college in New York, so I had done my first year in NUIG at the time, and it was fine, but I always had this kind of sense of like I'm with the same group of people. I haven't branched out. I haven't met anyone new. It all felt quite enclosed, and I just had this feeling that like there was more out there and I didn't really know how or what or what that looked like. And again, my coach at GRC at the time, he had contacts out in New York in colleges out there, and he was like, why don't you just reach out to them and just see, like my
Yeah.
2K wasn't incredible or anything like that. But I had been selected for Junior Worlds that year, and it was like a standout kind of thing on a CV, let's say. So I sent a few emails, not really expecting anything. And the first question that kind of came back was, well, have you sat your SATs? And at the time I was like, what's an SAT?
Yeah.
My knowledge was so small, and I hadn't really told my parents either because I didn't want anyone getting caught up in something that might not materialize. So I was like, let me gather information first. So realized then that I had to sit my SATs. So, I remember telling my mom then, oh, look, I'm going to do these exams so that I can get an idea of, collegiate offers in America. Now I didn't have any plans, but again, like my parents were so supportive, so they drove me to Black Rock to help me sit my exams, and that was straight after my first year college exams. So I went straight into the library after, months or weeks in the library doing my first year exams. That those, and then I ended up getting a few offers, and I wasn't sure what to do. Like I was 17, I just turned 18, I had
You
no
were still
idea.
young, like, weren't you?
Such a baby, it's crazy. And I'd wake up in the morning being like, oh my God, I could live in New York, and then I go to bed that night being like, there's no like, I think Dublin's too big. Like
Yeah.
how can I live in New York? But the thing that really stuck out for me was my mom. She was like, Fiona, you just try it for 6 weeks, and if you don't like it, you can come home. There's nothing wrong with that. At least you'll know, and you won't regret not knowing. So I actually deferred second year. So I was in Galway. So I was like, if I hate it, I can just loop straight back in the following year as if nothing ever happened.
Outstanding to know that it would be still there, though.
And the peace of mind and the reassurance of that, and the reassurance of knowing I can just book a flight and go home if I really, really hate it, but let me try it out.
Yeah.
And sure, I never looked back once I got there, that kind of way. And it was such a definitely a growing moment and independence. And I learned so much about myself, and I did grow up quickly. I'm a
You do
twin
your
and I
own
had lived.
watching.
Yeah, the little things, and like I'm a twin, and I lived with my twin brother like all my life up until that point. So even like being away from him was a total kind of culture shock, kind of just unsure of like how to navigate that, but important to do. Do you know the kind of way? And very grateful that I had that opportunity, and I loved it. The people that I met and the experiences that I had, and even in terms of training, like the collegiate program, the routine, while let's say the volume and the intensity might have been much less than high performance, that routine of, training before college and then again in the afternoon and weights,
Discipline and stuff.
it kind of taught me that basic structure so that when I went into high performance, it wasn't totally new to me. I was like, oh, I understand you train multiple times a day. I've done that, It is a big jump from junior into collegiate, but that kind of, I was like, the support that I had over there was great, So, yeah, definitely grew up quick, but I think it was, I wouldn't change it for the world, that kind of
Yeah.
way. Really enjoyed the experience. Yeah.
And especially in New York, it's like Dublin City, but 10 times bigger.
Yeah, it's magic, especially this time of year, and Thanksgiving, the little things that you kind of take away with
Yeah.
you, like lovely little holidays and stuff. So,
My
really
friend's
enjoyed
actually over
it.
there
Yeah.
this week. He sent me a picture. It's snowing mad over there.
Yeah, it was
Yeah.
beautiful. I lived in Boston for a year afterwards, and Boston, the snow is
Really.
beautiful. Yeah, it's fabulous. Really, really nice.
You're
So,
we'll touch on the Olympics, but you're working down in Cork at the moment, aren't you?
yeah, so I work with JP Morgan Workplace Solutions in Cork. So I started there. They have an athlete transition program, and I actually found that through Sport Ireland. And this last year was the first year that they had offered it in Cork. I knew it was in Dublin, so and I was had no intentions of moving to
Yeah.
Dublin, so I didn't think it was going to be for me. But then I saw that there was an offer going in Cork, so I applied, and yeah, I got it, and it was great. It's been such a, especially post-Olympic year, it's really important to kind of get back into something. And I've always kind of had something at different phases of each cycle, of each Olympic cycle. So I did my master's just after Tokyo, kind of early in the Paris cycle, and now I've started working again. And it's been a while since I've been in like the corporate space,
Yeah.
so getting exposure to that again and kind of bringing those skills from sport into a corporate setting, understanding that piece a little bit better, has been really beneficial to me, and I've really enjoyed it. So yeah, loving it, and they've been great. They've been so supportive on the whole journey, and I wouldn't be able to do this without, without their guidance and support. So I'm really grateful for that.
What's it like, I suppose, training around work? Because obviously it's full on.
Early mornings, very early mornings, which is
Cold
taking it
mornings.
like cold mornings this time of year. Yeah. So yeah, no, it does. It does require a lot of structure and a lot of organizing. But as long as you're diligent on that, it's completely doable. And I have to credit Dominic Casey for helping me with that. He's always been so solutions orientated, and he knows that this is important to me, and it's something that kind of helps with focus and with mental clarity. And if that provides good training, then he's so happy to support that. So it's been great. And yeah, they've so far they've balanced work and training have balanced each other quite nicely. Now, it is not easy, and it's not for everyone, and not everyone does it, and it's totally a personal thing. So for me, as long as I'm able to manage both, I'm like, why not?
Yeah.
It's if it's helpful, and it is. I've been enjoying it. So yeah.
It is handy to have something outside the of sport. Like I even know like
Yeah.
when I was playing sport before, I had my accident, I was working in a bar, and even just to be able to go and chat to other people away from sport alone, it's a good one. I suppose
Exactly. Increase your network that way. Yeah.
exactly, yeah, 100%. Tokyo, it was obviously a massive year. Then on the other hand, going through the pandemic, and obviously it was so different compared to the other Olympics. What was it like, I suppose, getting there? There was obviously the buzz of being at the Olympics and then no crowds. Was it kind of bittersweet?
It was funny. It was all I ever knew, that year. So I had joined, I went full time high performance January of 2020. And this was when, COVID wasn't a thing. No one knew about it. Everything was kind of going as is. And there was a project for a four to go to the Last Chance Regatta in May. So I went on camp in Italy, or that Christmas camp. And I got invited then to come down and join the group full time after that. So I basically came back to Galway after that camp. I quit my job. I left my apartment. I was like, this is a now or never moment. And if I don't take it, I'll regret it for the rest of my life. So I moved down. And within 6 weeks, 2 months, like the Olympics got cancelled. I was like, have I made the biggest mistake
After
of my
going
life?
all
Do you
in.
know, after going all in, that was the immediate result. And I was like, oh God. So no, the and then so like there was lockdown and everything, but that was honestly, it was such a silver lining because it gave me more time on the program, which was great for me, and I needed it just to understand how my body moved, like to deal with that, like loading and that volume of training, and to understand like how everything worked in a high performance setting. But then when everything kind of started opening up again and there was regattas, they were all closed off. So we went to Europeans in 2020 in September, and that was a closed off event. So there was no one. And that was my first, let's say, major senior international event. And then the following year, we did Europeans again. We did Last Chance and the Games, and they were all closed off. So to me, it was nothing new. It was funny. You went to Tokyo and there was empty stands, but I was like, it's all I know is empty
All you
stands.
knew.
It was, I was like, okay, cool, just another regatta with empty stands, And it was something nice to almost think of it like that and not to think of this as an Olympic Games. It kind of put the pressure off us a little bit, and it allowed us to really focus in on each other because we weren't distracted by all the little extra bits that come with an Olympics, So, but we enjoyed it, and we got to enjoy it for each other and through each other, and especially, training through COVID was so, it was so difficult, and it was great to have the support of the other girls because we're all going through the same thing, and we all had to, for safety, to reduce risk, we had to stay in that bubble. So, you couldn't see friends, you couldn't see family for very extended periods of time, and that was hard, but knowing that other people were going through the same thing and we could rely on each other and chat with each other through it was, it definitely made us a lot closer together. So really grateful for that. But yeah, it's funny how it all works. And then it was great, for Paris, let's say, to have family there and to have people come over. And I had friends fly from Australia to go to Paris, and to hear afterwards all their stories being like, it was the trip of a lifetime, it was the trip of the summer. They loved reuniting with so many people, and it's great to, and such a privilege to be, involved in that. And they were using, the rowing as an excuse to kind of get all together again after, a couple of years apart. So yeah, really nice to kind of hear all those stories afterwards.
And after Tokyo, Fiona, did expectations kind of rise? And as a team, obviously you said there it's good to have the other girls and let's kind of chat and to communicate. Did you find that expectations kind of rose after Tokyo heading into Paris?
Yeah, it was exciting. Like coming up, we were so new. Well, I was so new, and a few of the girls were so young, and it was exciting going into it, knowing that okay, we know what we need to do, and we know how to go about it to achieve results. But the kind of 2 years post Tokyo, we had a string of different projects going on. And things kind of changed around. So we actually never spent a lot of time in that, let's say, Tokyo lineup ever again, just for different reasons. But it kind of did definitely set the foundation of like how we went about ourselves and how we conducted business, and which was such a essential, let's say, knowledge piece for me in my journey. It led me to the path that I am on now, and I have those people and that system to thank. And every step, every regatta, every world championship, every Olympic Games is another piece to the puzzle that kind of makes you the athlete that you are, and how those performances kind of define you, and how you make the most of them, or how you learn from them when they don't go well. So yeah, Paris, the Paris cycle was a funny cycle because it was short, you know, it was only 3 years. So there was a lot to kind of fit in, let's say, within that space. And myself and Afric ended up being the pair, you know, I think about 6 weeks before the qualifiers in 2023. And we had a great result, you know, we came fourth. So that was incredibly exciting. And we were relatively, you know, new-ish to racing pairs. So
You know what
going
made them
into
pairs, Fiona? Is it I don't know, people mightn't know, do you have to kind of fight for your seat on the boat?
Yeah, so we do every year, kind of like I said at the beginning, like it's a clean slate every
Yeah.
year, no matter, like, you know, I've come off this season as a world champion, I
Yeah.
start this season on a clean slate, you know, everyone's fighting for to be the be their best selves, and it's an extremely competitive environment that we're in, and I'm grateful that it's that because it brings out the best in me, you know. So you go through like our trialing process. We've got, you know, two or three selection opportunities early in the season, and you select, you get your rankings, you get your speed orders, you select your crews, and then you race them throughout the season. And then depending on results, things will stay, things might change. Like it's up to coach's discretion on that. So for the Paris cycle, off the back of the World Championships, because we're newish to pairs, you know, we stayed in that pair for the winter, and we kind of did our rankings and stuff then earlier in the year. And then based on the season, then we had raced, we'd podiumed actually at every event, leading up to the games. So unfortunate that, you know, Paris didn't work out, but those things happen. And like I said earlier, those are learning opportunities that it's important to understand and to overcome and to go through that. It kind of helped define me this year in the 2025 season in particular, you know, to learn from those mistakes and those hardships, and to kind of overcome those challenges. And it's something I've been particularly proud of in 2025, that I was able to overcome so much and see the success that I had. I didn't expect it to happen so quickly. I thought it was something that would take years, or but there was a point early after the games that I was like, maybe it's never going to happen, you know. There was a lot of doubt there. So I have to be grateful for the team, and again for Dominic for instilling that belief in me and overcoming those moments of doubt, I suppose.
And I have heard you on other interviews talk about yourself and Africa have a good friendship, and it's kind of obviously after you went on to singles, then kind of after Paris, you spoke about Dominic. He played a huge role in, I suppose, you going on to the singles. What was it like, I suppose, when you're so used to being in a pair like yourself and Africa, now you're in a boat by yourself and you've to just rely on yourself. Did
Yeah,
you feel such new
it's
pressure?
very di it was just different, and it was something I really wasn't used to. Do you know, let's say for the Tokyo cycle, we were in fours, it was a big group, it was a lot of voices. For the Paris cycle, you know, it was pairs, it was myself and Africa, but it was really three because it included our coach Giuseppe at the time. Do you know, there was always communication, and there was always collaboration and decision making. And even throughout sessions, you know, you'd stop and you'd have a chat and you'd discuss and you'd be like, okay, we'll decide this. And for the single, it was a lot of autonomy all of a sudden, and it was something I never had, and I really wasn't used to it. And it was quite a scary feeling because it had to t it taught me the independence of myself, and to back my own decisions, whether they were right or whether they were wrong, you know, but to be confident in that decision making process, and to learn, okay, what suits me, or what doesn't, or okay, this doesn't work, how do I go about it, you know? And to do that for myself, I think was the biggest challenge, because I would take such pride in it, helping someone else achieve their goals and their dreams, and I loved being a part of that space and seeing that through for someone else. But in the single, it's all for you. Do you know, there's a selfishness to it, if that
Yeah,
makes sense,
which
which
there
is
has
just,
to be, I suppose.
yeah. And it was just a mindset shift that I had to make that at the beginning was incredibly uncomfortable, but necessary for what I want, for where I was and what I wanted to achieve. But it was great that and I'll keep coming back to it, like Dominic was so essential in providing that space and for allowing me to understand that change. He would I go off in a single and I'd be on my own and I'd be crawling, like I wouldn't be going very fast at all. And he'd stop, he'd follow me for a bit and he'd give me some guidance and then he'd go away, and he'd follow something and he'd leave me on my own, and I'd have to be like, okay, I have to make this change. No one else is around. Like I need to do this. If I want to do well, I have to do this for me. So it was just that subtle shift in thinking really kind of brought me out of my shell almost. For someone who has been a team person their entire lives, I'm a twin, I'm in company all the time, to go into that kind of individual characteristic was just, it was just so foreign and a massive learning journey. Yeah, so it's been a, but now looking back, let's say in the last year, it's taught me so much about myself, and I find the single is funny in the way that you can, no stroke is perfect, and there's no perfect way of doing things. You're not seeking perfection. You're expressing your strengths in the way that best suits you. While I find in pairs, like I think the pair is the hardest boat to row for sure. It's so technically, oh, so challenging. It's definitely the hardest boat because you have to blend two people together
Be in rhythm completely, like.
perfect symmetry, and I always felt like I was seeking perfection in those kind of scenarios, which was an impossible task. I was seeking something that was it ever gonna happen, While in the single, I row it in a way that expresses my strengths first, and then I'll tweak it in a way that can, obviously there's some things I need to work on, there's some challenges I need to overcome, and I'll adjust those as I see fit. But it'll always be my foundation is okay, what am I good at? And I'll do that first. And then I'll tweak it as I go. And I think that's really been the difference in the last cycle, or the last season.
Been nearly a bigger mental barrier as well than
For
physical.
sure. Yeah, it
Did
really
you see
has.
yourself going to singles?
Oh my, oh no, never.
Really?
Never. And I used to watch it. I always made time for it at regattas because I thought it was so impressive what they did and how they did it. And I was like, training on your own, like how do they, like never for me, I couldn't imagine. So to be like this year, especially for Europeans, like Europeans was my first senior single event, to be involved in that, I was like, this is just so incredibly exciting. Like it's so new to me. I felt like a novice, I just felt like completely out of my comfort zone. I was like, I can't believe that I'm doing this. This is beyond what I ever thought I'd achieve. I thought I'd see a medal in a women's Irish eight before I saw a medal in a single, So yeah, it's so funny that like the magic kind of lies in the work that you avoid. And I always avoided the single and I never knew why. I thought I wasn't good at it. I never actually gave it the time of day. So kind of learnings in that as well.
Before we finish up, we have to touch on Shanghai, like we said there. That was obviously probably apart from the Olympics, I suppose getting there, winning in Shanghai was probably one of your biggest personal I suppose accomplishments. That was huge, obviously, for yourself, and especially after becoming over that barrier, like you said. What was it like in Shanghai, and when you finally won? Because I know I watched the race and. At the end, it was close, like, and like I've heard you say, you made kind of a little wobble during the race. What was it like, I suppose, to know you got over that little wobble and still managed to pull through?
Yeah, the competition itself, it was crazy. It really was a testament of the entire year, and my mindset throughout that whole regatta was, it was incredibly calm, calmer than I've ever been. And I knew I needed to be because of the, let's say, the length of the regatta. For typically for, the women's pair or the women's four, you'd start one of the first days and you'd finish one of the first days. Well, the single, you start on the second day, but you finish last. It's a much longer competition,
Oh,
and you
really?
have, yeah, so you have days off in between. And by the time that I had done my semi,
Do you like that?
the rest of the team were finished. Do you know, like I was, apart from the mixed double, which was Fintan and Mags, I was the only one left. Everyone had gone through their competition, and everyone had gone through the highs and lows, and everyone's competition was very different. You know, some people had great success, some people had major disappointments, and you had to, as a single sculler, you had to look at that with a sense of distance. I couldn't get too high in the highs, and I couldn't get too low in the lows. I had to steer the course in this very middle, kind of distant. And I'm an emotional person at heart.
Yeah.
Like, I, do you know, I wear my heart on my sleeve. So to stay in this space of calm, composure, collected, a little bit distant was very difficult to do, but necessary to not suffer any like mental fatigue or physical, you know, any external fatigue,
Yeah.
let's say, that would have built up over time. So yeah, by the time I was really grateful that the mixed double, the event was there, and a really cool event to watch, by the way. They were, Fintan and Mags were unbelievable. So to have them on race day, because they were racing as well, it was nice to have. I was and another part of the single sculling life that I'm not used to is, you know, the warm up on your own. And for typical regattas where it's like 3 days long, people are unpacking the tent around you while you cycle, like warm up on the bike before, you know, you head off for your final. You know, everything's just a little bit different than what I've been used to before. But for the final, yeah, like it was incredibly hot. First of all, China was so hot. It was so humid. But our service providers and our support
The time
staff
of
did an
day there really was it.
Yeah, they just did a really good job at like keeping on like cooling strategies and keeping us out of the heat, and doing everything that needed to be done to kind of gain that extra edge. I think we did a really good job at that, which kind of stood out. But yeah, I was really calm before the race. Like, I Fintan and Mags had done their heat in the mixed double, and they'd won it, and they looked so slick. And I was watching them, and I was like, we're all in for a shot here. I was like, this is so achievable for the three of us, you know, and to be in a space with them where the three of us fully believe that we can win is, if I could bottle it and sell it, I would. It was so magic. It was an emotion that I had to channel calmly. I couldn't get too overexcited on it, but to relive it again was like, you know, you were hooked, you know, that kind of way. So yeah, the race itself, I kind of knew I had to go out hard, and I've said this before, like through gut feelings. I was like, I know other people's kind of race profiles at this stage, and I know my own race profile, and given the heat and given all these different scenarios, I was like, I need to kind of go off hard and get an early lead and just hold on for dear life. And I was like, and then if I do that and I can do no more. Like, for me, the whole season hasn't been, ch and the irony as I say this, the whole season ha wasn't about chasing medals. It
Yeah.
was a, it was about like finding joy in the sport and getting, like, I'm a racer at heart, and getting back into that, like, you know, mindset of like chomping on the bit at it and going after it, and bringing that kind of like out in me. So to it's funny when you stop hyper focusing on medals, that the medals start coming. Do you know,
Yeah.
it's so strange. So I knew I had to kind of go out early, and my start on the for the heat, my start wasn't great. So it was something I was working on throughout the whole phase of the competition. And so first 500, I was like, yeah, okay, I have a good start. I had an early jump, and I kind of just stuck at it, and I clocked at every, let's say, 500 was kind of a point where I'd do a kind of check, like a, how am I doing? Do you know? So
Yeah.
I scanned the field really quickly, and I was very lucky. Like, the two main competition were left and right of me, and I could see them well. So I was like, right, I know I'm at least a length up. So I was like, grand, through 500, grand. Do you know? Keep loose, positive reinforcement, all going well. Hit the K, then same thing. Check, nothing had changed. If anything, I thought I had a bit more of a gap that I created. again, like another opportunity for like positive reinforcement. Perfect. Like just keep doing what you're doing. Don't think too much. Like keep it loose, keep it relaxed. It was a tailwind. Tailwind suit me. I knew I had to be a little bit more front-ended, a little bit more sharp, a bit punchy. And then through the 500 to go, through the 1500, it was still there. And I was just like, oh, you've done all this work. Do you know what I mean? I was like, literally, like you have 60 strokes before you win your first ever event, and it's at a world championship. I was like, oh my God. Do you know? So it was kind of now or never moment. But I could feel, and I knew it was going to happen. I could feel the fatigue and the heat and everything like start to really kick in. And my mind was really sharp, but my body was lagging. It was completely lagging behind me. And it was a thing of like there was nothing I could do about it. It was just try and go into that like I don't know, muscle memory and do the best that I can. And it's at that point then I kind of caught the little digger, and I saw Lauren, the GB sculler. I saw her head kind of flick back, and I was like, oh no. It's like she saw it. But it almost gave me like adrenaline that I was able to kind of get back up again and get a bit lively, and I literally just went like back up, you know, closed my eyes, like pulled, like there was nothing
Well,
left, honestly. And we crossed the line, and I hadn't a clue. I had no idea.
it was so close, like.
She had no idea, you know. And in fairness, like fair play to her, like she had some massive sprint in her to get it back to that, you know. So yeah, it was like they called it like the race of the competition by how close it was. So yeah, to be on the right side of that, you know, I've had so many regattas in my life where like I've had success and I've had podiums, but there was always something that went like
Yeah.
this was the thing that never quite, you know. So to finish a competition and to be like I did everything right and I did everything I could, and it actually worked out in my favor. It was such a, I don't know, just such a like a relief, but such, like a proud moment. So yeah, incredibly excited about that. So
And
yeah,
lastly, before we
one for the
finish up,
memories.
what's it like to be nominated for Team Ireland Female Athlete of the Year? That's obviously a huge thing.
Yeah, so like so many nominations this year, and it's such an honor, you know, and such a privilege because like sport in Ireland at the minute is in such an exciting place. It's so
Unbelievable.
un.
Athletics and everything, like.
Across the board, like everyone is just superstars in their
Yeah.
field in their own right, you know, like boxing and cycling and swimming. Like the swimmers had a fantastic, it was at
Unreal.
Europeans there last week, you know, between golf and everything. And to be selected and recognized amongst all that is really cool, you know, and to be able to represent something that I love, something that I'm so passionate about. And to be, you know, kind of a head figure in that is such an honor of mine. So yeah, delighted. There's the Team Ireland Awards, there's the Irish Sports Woman of the Year Awards this Friday, and then there's the RTE Sports Person of the Year on Saturday. So it's a busy, it's an unusual space. I've never been as busy out of training before in my life, but really cool and soaking it all up because it's not guaranteed, you know. There's no security that this could happen again, you know, as much as I want it to, and I'll do my very best to make sure of it, but I have to enjoy it in the now for what it is and take those opportunities as they come.
Fiona, thanks so much for your time and all the best in the future with your career and whatever lies ahead. I'm sure it'll be more success. So thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Ian. It's been great chatting.
Now, unfortunately, that's all we've time for tonight. I hope you all enjoyed the show and I really appreciate you tuning in as always. I just want to say a massive thanks to Fiona for coming on tonight and chatting about her career so far and her stellar season that 2025 has been with all the success that she's had, and she's striving in the single sculls after, I suppose, transferring from being in the more of a team rowing to now she's by herself in the singles, and she's accomplishing a lot. So fair play to her and all the best in the future to Fiona. If you want to get in contact with me before next week's show, you can get in contact through my Instagram, enoconnell321. Or as always, you can send me an email to my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. I hope you're all having a great week so far. Stay tuned in here to Radio Kerry because Brian Priestley is up next with That's Jazz. I'll be back at the same time next week from 8 to 9 p.m. Until then, stay safe and mind yourself.
You're listening to Standout with Ian O'Connell, Wednesday evenings from 8 p.m. here on Radio Kerry.